Hello, my name is Sandy Adamidis, the social media director for the Page International Screenwriting Awards and your host for The Writer's Hangout, a podcast that celebrates the many stages of writing, from inspiration to the first draft, revising, getting a project made, and everything in between. We'll talk to the best and the brightest in the entertainment industry and create a space where you can hang out, learn from the pros, and have fun. Hey writers, it's Sandy. We have a terrific show for you with today's guests, John and Matt Furman, who are Baltimore, Maryland-based indie filmmakers. After spending years immersed in the local film community, brothers John and Matt saw a need for writers to have an easier way of turning their ideas into stories. So the brothers decided to explore the benefits of using AI, artificial intelligence, to help writers manage their process from idea to script, which led them to develop Story Prism, a suite of AI-powered writing tools to help creators flesh out their stories. AI writing today is not your dad's spell check from the 80s. It is so much more powerful. And I'm really curious to know how you feel after you listen to this episode about AI assistant writing. Send me an email at thewritershangoutpodcast@gmail.com, and hopefully we can discuss it on another episode. Now, let's get into it. John and Matt, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for having us on. We really appreciate this.
Hey guys, before we get started, would you like to play a quick game of Would You Rather?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I would like John to go first and then Matt to answer. How's that?
Okay.
Sure. All right. First question. Would you rather live a peaceful life in a small cabin in the woods or a drama-filled life in a mansion in the big city? John.
Probably peaceful life in a cabin in the woods.
Matt.
Cabin for sure. I mean, I always told myself that, like, if I can ever retire, I will definitely want to be like kind of in a woodsy area, you know, maybe not in a super small cabin, but you know, definitely away from the hustle and bustle. It's, you know, life is already stressful enough.
Would you rather have a tattoo of the title of the last script you read or the last TV show you watched? John.
That's a good one. I don't know. Probably the last TV show I watched.
And what was that TV show?
Oh, man. You know what? I just watched the show called Mr. Mercedes.
Well.
It's a Stephen King one. But I don't know if I'd rather have a tattoo of that.
I think Mr. Mercedes is a
perfect. Yeah, that's a good one. I guess I heard the answer. So, yeah, I guess so. There it is.
Matt.
Well, you know, I'll just make this fun and say the last script I read.
And the title?
Is actually untitled right now. So,
untitled.
Yeah.
So, are we going with untitled or untitled right now? Because that's a bigger cost in a tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a good point.
I would just probably say untitled just
untitled.
To save the money.
That's deep.
John, would you rather spend a Friday night out with Kurt Studer, creator of Sons of Anarchy, or Mike White, creator of White Lotus?
Ooh, that's a good one. I love both shows, but probably Mike White because I love White Lotus more.
Cool. Matt.
I'd have to say Sons of Anarchy.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, it was a visceral show, you know, and I mean, it was amazing writing in that. And so I'd love to just meet with him and pick his brain, you know.
Back to you, John. Would you rather read the book or watch the movie?
Probably watch the movie.
Yeah, definitely have to say watch the movie. I mean, to each his own. I read a lot, but a lot of the stuff that I read is nonfiction because whenever I'm reading, I really want to see it, you know, and when I read, I see it in my head, which can be very interesting, but I don't know. There's just something about like film and it's so much more of an immersive experience. So, and that makes it more visceral.
Yeah.
John, would you rather be stuck on an island alone or with someone who talks incessantly about Henry and the Hendersons?
Definitely, I would rather be with someone for sure. So even if they're talking about Henry and the Hendersons, which is not bad.
Yeah, I'd probably have to say Henderson's, as long as I can, like, get away.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Take walks on the beach, yes. John, would you rather have Rambo or the Terminator on your side in a fight?
The Terminator. Terminator, for sure.
Matt?
I'd have to probably say Terminator, just because he's more effective.
Yeah.
Cool. John, would you rather have to watch only Lost in Space reruns or only Black Mirror reruns for an entire year?
Black Mirror, for sure.
Matt?
Yeah, Black Mirror. Definitely have to go with that.
Last one. Would you rather, John, would you rather have an extra $10,000 in your budget or a driver to take you to set, back and to set every single day?
Definitely the $10,000 for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, no, definitely the $10,000, just because, you know, we can drive ourselves, and with the $10,000, you could split that up into possibly two or three films.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah, micro budget
with cell phones,
right? Yes.
You are true indie film guys for taking that $10,000 for the budget. I applaud you. Okay, for most, using AI to write is brand new, and words like chatbot and ChatGPT and natural language processing are being bandied about like writers and artists have always been using those words. I mean, everybody, everywhere I go, those words are just being spoken by everybody. And I'm not even sure what they all mean. And we're going to be discussing all of that with you. But before we get into it, you are brothers, and you are part of the supportive Baltimore indie film community. Can you share some of your background with us? And if you don't mind, your voices are very similar. If you don't mind saying, this is John, this is Matt.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is John. A little background. So Matt and I, you know, we grew up on movies. Our dad used to take us to a movie pretty much once a week. And so we always knew that was in our blood, and that's what we wanted to do as a career. So I went to film school. Matt, he studied history and did a student teaching. And you know, I work professionally as a cinematographer and an editor in the Baltimore area. And we also make independent films, and we're part of, there's a lot of great filmmakers here in the Baltimore area. And a lot of them, you know, aren't signed, and, you know, they kind of work with whatever budgets they can get. And, but there's a great community, and everyone helps each other out. And so Matt and I are part of a group called the Charm City Filmmakers. And there's one of the things that's great about them is they're really open with new filmmakers and people who haven't made a movie before. And so we saw a lot of people coming through this group and making great movies, great looking movies, right? And we realized that the stories were lacking, right? And it's like, it almost feels like the technology has.
You're speaking of the writing?
Of course. Yeah, exactly. So there was this thing where, you know, we saw people go through and they made their first movie, right? And it was okay. And then they made the second one, it was better, and the third one. But the stories and the writing just never seemed to keep up. It was one of those things where the skills of making the movie improved, but it seemed like the writing was lacking. And so Matt and I saw this opportunity where the technology to make a great looking movie has become accessible to everyone, but writing and the skill and the craft of storytelling seems to be still very, very elusive for a lot of people, and very, very difficult. And it takes a very long time to master the craft and to get really, really good. And so with the introduction of AI, we saw this opportunity to help, you know, especially new filmmakers and new writers to kind of learn the craft quicker and to kind of get the ideas that are in their head on page in the way that can translate well on screen. And so that's kind of how Story Prism started, and that's kind of how we fell into this.
Yep.
So, Matt, you started writing. It was almost like you were a directing writing team almost?
Yeah. Once we graduated high school and we went off to college, John, he ended up pursuing film. And, you know, I was kind of more pragmatic. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I need to, you know, make money and blah, blah, blah. So, but I don't know what I want to do. So I got into history and teaching because I really am interested in history, but I realized I didn't want to do that. And so I found myself in a rut. And this was around the time when John was doing like corporate videos and stuff. And he was kind of in a rut. And so that's when, you know, we kind of decided to band together to just make narrative films because we were just like, we didn't know what we wanted to do, but we knew that this was meaningful to us and it made us feel happy. And because I didn't have any formal training in film, I was almost defaulted into writing, right? Because somebody had to like have the script.
Yes, and love that. Somebody's got to play the bass. Somebody has to write.
And yeah, and as soon as I started digging into it, before I even learned like that there were script writing software out there and I was using Word and just writing it like regular novels, I just fell in love with it immediately. And I obsessively pretty much wrote almost every day for like anywhere between 2 to like 6 hours just to figure out how to master the craft and nail down the story that we're trying to convey. Because we had all these ideas, but they don't really
go
anywhere.
Your mom and dad had no idea they were birthing a production company. They got
Yeah.
I mean, that was perfect. Yeah, your brothers, you like each other. You do like each other, right?
Yeah, of course. Sometimes.
Your brothers, you like each other, and now you're creating together. I mean, that's how legends are made.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, honestly, it's great when you work with your brother because you can kind of let it all out and be a lot more honest, right? Instead of like tiptoeing around stuff because you know you're always just going to come back at the end of the day.
Your love of film, you know, brought you to create Story Prism. Now, I'm going to take a stab at this. I hope I get this right because this is all new to me. And one of the reasons why I'm very, very excited to talk to you guys today. Story Prism is a software that provides AI powered writing tools. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've got my mind wrapped around it. But for our listeners and for the writers out there, can you just give us a 30,000 foot view of AI generated writing? And then we'll get, you know, more down into the minutia with Story Prism.
I guess the best way to think about it is it's a very sophisticated algorithm that has a whole bunch of data, text data, that's fed to it from open source information on the internet. And then that data, it learns words and how to string them together using this huge swath of data before the data is then taken away. And then you can interact now with this algorithm via text, and it can output stuff that mimics human voice. So you can ask it a question, and using its predictive models that it has, then it pretty much just predicts what the likely answer would be to that, which is why you get some randomness as well, and also some inaccuracies, as we saw with ChatGPT and the integration with Bing. So that's stuff that they're kind of trying to work out, is trying to figure out how to make it a lot less random, more accurate, so that way it can be a lot more reliable. And so just like a human too, you can train these models. So basically, if you just feed it a whole bunch of examples for some specific task, then it can basically fine tune itself to where you can get outputs that are much, much more accurate and more expert level. Similar to like, you know, somebody who doesn't know anything about cinematography, learning and doing cinematography over and over again, and then being a contractor.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to think of it like if you remember in The Matrix, when Trinity's, you know, on the truck, and she's on her cell phone, and she says, you know, I need to know how to hotwire this particular model of a motorcycle. And she gets the information downloaded into her. Like, kind of wild analogy, but it is a little bit similar. It's like you can take a huge chunk of text. Like, for example, if you wanted to fine-tune the AI to be an expert on this particular style of plot design, right? You can basically find some examples of that particular style, feed it to it, and now that the AI is an expert on that, and it can help you, you know, with whatever task you need.
So let's take a step back, and this is how I was able to kind of comprehend it all. It's easier to grasp this if you're thinking of it for content, letters, something not quite as expansive, screenplays. But say I want to write a sales post and I say, I'm selling my house. It's this big. It has this many bathrooms and it's got charming woods around it. And I just feed it all in. I can press a button and a paragraph will come back to me and I will program it to be for selling my house. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, all absolutely. Right. So
yes. Now how does that translate to screenwriting?
When it comes to screenwriting, it's pretty much almost the same principle. It's really good at spitting out frameworks for you. But if it's specifically trained on a very specific thing, so like here's a good example, on-the-nose dialogue, right? Yes. That is something that spell check can't identify.
Correct. Can you explain what on-the-nose dialogue is to
Oh, sure, Ellen? Sure. Yeah, so on-the-nose dialogue is sort of this thing that you do with your dialogue where you're not using subtext in your action lines, and instead you're kind of putting it into the dialogue. And it's usually things that are like really obvious that everybody in the room knows. So then it kind of makes that dialogue sequence seem off and fake, you know? It's like sort of breaking that suspension.
Could it be like, hello, mother, I'm going to kill you with this knife?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of hiding the knife or using sort of subtlety in their dialogue. Yes. Yeah. And so with this, what it can do is if it's trained properly, it can identify areas in the dialogue that may appear on the nose. And so then it can give you suggestions on like how to integrate subtext into that dialogue. Or maybe even suggest like, hey, don't say anything at all.
Yeah. You know? Or another example could be if you input into the AI, for instance, your premise or your character's desire or, you know, any kind of attribute, right? In theory, the AI would have that information. So it could identify within the dialogue, within your screenplay, you know, choices that you've made that may not align with your premise or the character choice that may be in, you know, incongruent with its desire. And that's where the power of AI.
Something really as my screenplay is set in urban downtown LA and my character goes outside and picks poisonous flower from the street. What a bad example, sorry. But the AI can tell me you're not going to find a poison plant growing downtown LA.
So yes, mostly that is correct. Again, they're still working out like sort of the randomness of it. It's not quite there in terms of researching, but it is pretty darn good. I mean, I've been experimenting with it personally on just ChatGPT and, you know, for writing questions and, you know, because that's one of the only few things that I can verify is like, okay, that's pretty correct. Or not. But, you know, if I asked it a question on physics, I would have no earthly idea if it was true or not.
Do you mind explaining GTP?
Basically, it's just a natural language processing algorithm that is run by OpenAI right now. And they have other AI models that are on OpenAI, as you know, including DALL-E. They just came out with DALL-E 2.
Image gen.
Yeah, that's an image gen model. But then they also have, ones that you can train yourself, like GPT-3. And then with ChatGPT, it's really just sort of an interface. It's a chat interface that's openly available. They have a free one that you can use, and you can also pay a subscription.
Matt, you said that you ask ChatGPT writer questions. What do you mean by that?
Well, questions related to the writing craft itself, because I kind of wanted to stress test it to see mm-hmm. how accurate it was. And so I asked it questions that, you know, I ask when I first started out, which is, you know, how do I map out my story? You know, what does it mean when they say utilizing white space? That doesn't, you know, what does that mean?
Oh, great. Good.
You know, and it can answer that very, very well.
Great. What is your goal with Story Prism? Let's talk about Story Prism. That's your baby. At the beginning, you were talking about being filmmakers and just realizing that the screenplays that you were reading maybe weren't what you felt up to par. And then you decided to do Story Prism. Is that?
Yeah, this is John, by the way. It was basically a thing where, you know, Matt and I worked on the craft for many years, and we essentially saw the development of AI progressing at a tremendous pace. This is back in like 2020 or so. And we essentially were like, you know, hey, this would be great if we, so Matt and I developed kind of a really strong pre-writing process. And that's what we use essentially as templates to whenever we write a screenplay. And it's very strong. It's really effective for us. And so we saw that AI would be really helpful, you know, with this process and very intuitive to use.
You saw a niche in the market. You mm-hmm. saw that this intelligent AI writing is out there, but you honed in on the screenwriting, which I think mm-hmm. is very smart.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's well, yeah, exactly. Because that's the hard, I mean, that's pretty much, I would argue, is one of the hardest things to do next to, you know, running an entire production as a showrunner for a big show. But it's very elusive, and it's hard for people to grasp. And the best, you know, the thing that we realized with AI is that, you know, instead of being like the sci-fi movies where it just completely replaces us, it, you know, it basically is programmed to be an assistant to make up in the areas that you lack in. So just as much as you can do this with writing, you can also do this with production tools for writers to help them visualize their stories.
Exactly. And so you asked, you know, what's the goal with Story Prism? And really it's to allow anyone to tell their story. Right. And, it, you know, it, wherever they are in life and they are in the world. Right. We have a lot of customers in Nigeria, for instance, and they love the idea of using AI. So they don't really have a strong infrastructure over there to kind of help develop the craft and,
right.
and really train themselves. So they see the potential of AI as like a you know, a way to kind of, you know, help get these crazy ideas in their head down on page. And that's really what our goal is. It's to help more people tell their story.
And having your background and your passion is really important. I think this would all take longer to be successful if people who weren't writers were developing this software.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yes.
That creative people are building this software, because the creative mind is different from your average person who's just looking for marketing tools to fill out a medical blog.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very interesting you brought that up, because there is kind of this interesting dynamic within the tech space. So Matt and I are kind of, you know, immersed in both the AI world and then also in the entertainment world. There's a lot of technical people who don't get the artistic side.
And right, there's nothing wrong with that, but they just don't.
Exactly. Yeah. And but yet they want to build tools to help writers or to help, you know, other things like that. And so, you know, and if you know, I don't mean to, you know, basically disparage any of our competitors, but if you look at some of what they're creating, it doesn't necessarily work for screenwriters, right? It doesn't necessarily work for that craft.
Right.
And it's clear that they're not necessarily thinking in that sense. And so, which is very specific, and it takes a lot of, you know, skill earned and learned to really understand what goes into that.
Yeah. Right. But I think it also has to do with experience as well. Right. Because like the experience of creating something that's the reason why we sit on the computer and, you know, spend hours writing, or why we, you know, put a lot of sweat, time and energy into film productions, because it's that process, that satisfaction you get from creating something. And I think that point is often missed with a lot of these, you know, startups, because they're just kind of guessing at like how it can be integrated without factoring in like the soul in creativity, right? And that's right. Something that makes creators across the board very fearful of AI, because then when they see these programs, they're seeing this attempt almost in their eyes to replace them. And that's just not how AI is going to be used, because at the end of the day, you know, it's contingent upon how millions of people use it, right?
Yes. One of the things I told myself when I started to look into this AI was to not get fearful, to not roll my eyes, you know, just get in and find out what it is. And in my research, oh, and by the way, we're not affiliated in any way, shape, or form. This isn't a paid advertising or anything like that. I did research after you guys contacted us. I couldn't find a lot of other programs like yours that are catered to screenwriters. It's all catered to marketers and blogs and social media content providers who have to come up with unbelievably amounts of information every single day. So you hire these companies and they just help get, you know, your videos out, you know, three videos a day or, you know, blogs a week. That is not what this is. That is not what Story Prism is. I mean, you can kind of utilize it that way, correct?
You could. Yeah, it is very specific to screenwriting.
That's why I like specific to screenwriting.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, also just for like pre-production purposes as well, because we're getting into image generating.
That for pre-production image for the production designers? What are we talking about?
Yeah, well, really just for like kind of getting a visual on the script, right? I mean, I think
so it's going to tell me what's the
storyboarding.
Yeah, like storyboarding and stuff like that, reading lookbooks.
Where does Story Prism get the information it copies and feeds back to writers?
The information comes from, well, first off, so what Matt said, you know, with GPT-3. So GPT-3 is the AI that we use, and they were trained on all the information on the internet, basically up to like 2019 or something like that. That's how they made their models.
Well, open source.
Of course.
They didn't like hack into encrypted websites.
Yeah. And open source means it's open for everyone to use.
Exactly. So anything that was available open source. Exactly. So they train their model, right? And so they allow companies to kind of like use it. And basically, you know, you could use it straight out of the box, right? But that essentially is kind of dumb for your specific task straight out of the box. So what you have to do is you have to fine tune it. And so what Matt and I did to fine tune is that we came up ourselves with hundreds of original stories and fine tuned over like many months. Like we basically sat down and came up with like, here's a log line. And it was exhausting, but we essentially trained our own AI out of GPT-3 that's very fine tuned specific for the tools that we offer. And so all of the tools utilize these specific fine-tuned models that are just for the task at hand. So, for example, in a Story Foundation, which is one of the tools we offer, which allows writers to develop a log line, each one of those boxes is a fine-tuned model, basically.
Yeah, so we had to come up with like 300 examples of what is your character's desire, you know, what is their need, you know, stuff like that.
So the writer goes in and clicks off these boxes or writes in information.
Yep.
And then the log line is generated, or you got to give them your work in progress log line and it fixes it.
Exactly. We're still building out a lot of the features with Story Prism, but the end goal is essentially a user being able to train their own AI assistant to be able to help them in the writing process. But in order to do that, the AI needs certain information. One of them is a log line in order to understand your story.
Understand. Okay.
And then
The million-dollar question, does AI write your screenplay for you?
No, definitely not. If you did that, so I'll put it to you like this. Technically, can, say, ChatGPT write your story, right, from finish to end?
Yeah.
But
When you mean write, do you mean a paragraph or do you mean a screenplay?
A paragraph. Well, you would do it paragraph by paragraph. So you'd have to do it like one at a time because it'll veer off into randomness. But at the end of the day, you would be a complete fool to do that and to actually pitch that to a real producer because it's going to be like at best very tropic, very expecting. It's really best used as a framework and as also helping you in very specific parts, especially for parts that you just don't want to do.
Right. It's really funny because I just read an article about this science fiction writing competition. And one of the judges on there was saying like this year they received some submissions that were obviously written by AI. And it was funny that you could tell that they were written. Yeah, it was funny. You know, what stood out to me was that he could tell that they were written by AI. And, you know, he said a lot of these guys are putting a prompt in and they're spitting out a story and then they're submitting it. It was like a short story competition for science fiction. And so they're submitting it to these contests in an effort, I guess, to win prize money or something like that. But they don't spend any time thinking about the story. And so the story is very bad. And so, you know, the AI, it's really interesting. AI becomes whatever you want it to be. Right, really is a mirror on you and your own, you know, skill and ideas, right? And so if you have bad ideas, it's going to give you bad story, right? It's all about how you work with it, which is why I don't think, you know, being able to press a button and, you know, spit out a screenplay is anything that's people really worry about. Yeah,
if you could do that, that's creative cheating.
Right.
But this is just another tool to help. Yeah. Bring your creativity out. That's
exactly.
There's a saying by Ernest Hemingway that it's none of their business that you had to learn how to write. Let them think you were born this way. I don't have to tell anyone that an AI helped me figure out my log line. You might have called up a friend, brainstormed for the same log line.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to put in a tremendous amount of work anyway. It's
Those people who don't have writer friends, and for those people who have writer friends that won't talk to them anymore because they ask way too many. We know that writer. Come on. We know that writer. Yeah. Now, you've mentioned that it's getting smarter. So this leads me to another million-dollar question. What do you say to writers who feel a machine could replace them? Should they fear AI? And are you Skynet?
No, well, definitely not Skynet. One day, right, AI could become so good that it could automate away 60-plus percent of the workforce, right?
Now, that's high, 60%.
It is, yeah. And I'm not saying this is going to happen now or 10 years or 20 years. Nobody knows what the future is going to be like. But I think just at some point down the road later, maybe beyond our lifetimes, who knows, there is a real possibility for that happening. But if that were to happen, then the entire economic model that we have would implode. We can't let that happen because the entire economy exists because we created it as people, right? It exists to basically serve ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when it comes down to it at the end of the day, if that does happen, then a new economic model will change and you could see this new symbiotic relationship form between creators and the viewers themselves because there would be a massive demand for creators to be able to continue to create and make money. And there would be a massive demand from everybody to find different ways of making money. And what better way to make money than to in a tokenized economy where users or anybody can just invest in pretty much anything they want, including media content, studios, or individuals, you know?
You can support a writer.
So basically, you know, so there's a lot of things that are kind of coming out of the woodwork from crypto and blockchain technology as well that a lot of people aren't really paying attention to, especially since there was this crypto bust that happened and, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried and all that other crazy garbage. But that was a bubble, right? Because of new technology that came out, very similar to the internet, but probably on steroids. And that shook a lot of people up. But the underlying technology, though, is still being worked on. And I think a lot of amazing things will come out of that. One of that being decentralized autonomous organizations, also known as DAOs. And that's the basic idea is you could essentially have a company where the shareholders are the users themselves instead of a few rich people who get in on the ground floor. And then that holds the companies accountable and it also enriches the users as well at the same time. And if, you know, a company maybe does something that's not so popular, maybe even nefarious, then people can speak with their money and they can leave and they can go to another DAO, like a competitor. And so you can imagine maybe an economy where everything is more or less tokenized. So you can have a platform where you have personal independent studios with their own slated content, and people can not only interact with that and give suggestions to things, and have those suggestions basically on a blockchain so that if that suggestion is big enough and it's integrated into something that makes money, like a film, then that user who contributed to that idea can get a small dividend from that automatically, right? And then they can also just directly invest in the films or the shows or the users themselves.
It's wild. It's a brave new world.
But I think it's important to emphasize that, you know, the market is really the deciding factor in this, right? So, in addition to that, there's a lot of other forces involved, right? There's the law, you know, legal stuff, you know, politics, unions, stuff like that. So to answer your question, is there a future where AI basically automates away all jobs and everything like that? I think that, like Matt said, the worst case scenario is that, 60%, but I think that it really depends on the market. And it depends on what people demand and what people ultimately spend on, right? So I think AI is an interesting space because people are still trying to figure out the market. That's why you see a lot of companies right now who are doing AI for copywriting and things like this, because that's like the low-hanging fruit. So we haven't really figured out how AI really can work and really integrate into existing systems and existing processes. That's kind of what Matt and I are trying to figure out with Story Prism for the entertainment industry. That's still to be determined. And so I don't see a future. Personally, I'm an optimist. I don't see a future where, you know, nobody can work and everyone gets, you know, basic income and this and that. I see a future where it's more empowered. That's more open. And, you know, people don't have to rely on spending 10 years of their life trying to toil away at a dream that may not happen, right? They can do it now. And that's really what we want to see. And that's what we're trying to build.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do our writers find you if they want to check you out and learn more about Story Prism?
Sure. Yeah. You can check us out at storyprism.io. That's our main website. We also have, you know, a Facebook page and Twitter, which is Story Prism, and then also a YouTube channel.
Yeah, and also we have a really nice Substack channel as well, where you can get all sorts of useful information on the writing process itself, as well as tips on making your first film when you have no idea what you're doing. You just find us on all those channels.
Great. Matt and John, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending this time with us and discussing a complicated subject and breaking it down for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Our pleasure.
Yeah. Definitely happy to be here.
That's a wrap for the Writers Hangout. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, like, and thrive. Till we get to hang out again, keep writing. The world needs your stories. The Writers Hangout is sponsored by the Page International Screenwriting Awards. Executive Producer, Kristen O'Vern. Producers, Terry Sampson and Sandy Adamitis. Music, by Ethan Stoller.